On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we review the weekend action. Three teams collecting sweeps, the Padres over the Rockies, Mariners over the Rangers, Reds over the Pirates. Then we go around the league, talk about some of the other weekend series that caught our attention. The Cubs and Dodgers, the Giants and Yankees, the AL East has us very confused. Then in the final chunk, we talk about statues. Joe Mauer gets a statue. What other statues would we like to see across baseball before we throw it into turbo mode and recap the rest of the weekend action? All that on this episode, Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that watched the Masters yesterday and couldn't stop thinking about the real Augusta Green Jackets. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And did you know there has never been a Major League Baseball player named Rory?
Oh, really? That is a good fun fact. I feel like, will we get one? Is there currently a minor league Rory? There is a draft prospect for this year named Rory Fox, a pitcher at Notre Dame. So maybe he's our best bet. I don't know if there are any minor league Rorys, but Rory Fox, pressure is on you to pitch your way to the big leagues and become the first big league Rory.
This is a baseball podcast, and therefore we will not talk about Rory McIlroy winning the Masters for that much. Did you watch it yesterday?
Oh, I did. I was laughing.
I think it is important as sports fans to acknowledge whenever another sport has an absolute banger of a moment. And that was very much the case yesterday. I enjoyed the bejesus out of the final day of the Masters.
Yeah. Part of it for me was obviously it had been on the television.
Yeah,
in every the Guardians clubhouse. Like, this is what baseball players want to talk about anyway. So I consider it just, you know, doing research on behalf of my profession is to be able to small talk golf with big leaguers. I mean, come on, that's kind of a big part of this.
You just walk up to any middle reliever and you go, Bryson DeChambeau.
Man,
and then the middle reliever will
go.
They'll give you like anything you need.
I'm so glad you said the name Bryson DeChambeau. All right, enough golf chat. It's Monday. We have a lot of baseball to recap, which we were also watching over the weekend. We are going to begin, as always, with our three undefeated teams from the weekend. How sweep it is, Jake. We begin in San Diego, where the Padres were not just undefeated over the weekend, they remain undefeated at Petco Park in 2025, 10-0 to start the season in front of the Friar faithful. And what they did this weekend to the Colorado Rockies, who I think established themselves this weekend as the worst team in baseball, they did not let them score one time.
Nope.
And sorry, Rockies, this is not golf. You do not want the lowest score possible. You need to score more than the other team. But the Padres said, no, no, no. Nick Pivetta on Friday, Kyle Hart, who we should probably have a longer conversation about at some point, on Saturday, and Michael King with the CGSHO, baby, 110 pitches on Sunday. Dominance from the Padres.
This had the vibe of when an NBA player does a charity event and keeps swatting shots away against like sick children. This was the Padres being like, nope, you will not score. That is not allowed.
Is this the Chappelle Show sketch where he goes and plays the NBA Street facsimile against the kid in the hospital? Is that what this is?
Yeah, that's what that felt like. All Major League Baseball players are talented. There are times in a season when a team that is good is going so well and plays a team that is bad that is going so poorly that the teams feel as if they are in different leagues, that they belong in different tiers of the sport. And that is what this weekend felt like with Padre pitching against Colorado hitting. It was dominant. It was embarrassing. And that's what's funny about like when this kind of thing happens, when a team pitches so well. Both things are true. Like the Padres pitched really well. They would have allowed a run if they had been playing the Dodgers, right?
Basically,
like the Dodgers probably would have scored a run.
Right.
And so you have to give credit to the Padres. And you also have to be like, maybe we don't need the Rockies anymore as a character. I'm just kidding. You know, they're my favorite baseball team.
Yes. So just a couple stats on shutting out a team three times in the same weekend. 34th time in baseball history. First time since 2017. Of course, courtesy of the great Sarah Langs. The one thing that I am interested about in this series is that, of course, the pitching is what was so spectacular. And by the way, that's just been true for the Padres all along. They basically have had baseball's best bullpen. And the starting pitching had not, going into the weekend, the starting pitching ERA had not necessarily been that special, but they showed up. It was also important because the Padres are down a couple of hitters right now. Jackson Merrill and Jake Cronenworth are both on the aisle, which means their parade of NRI superheroes like Jose Iglesias and, you know, Maldonado and Gavin Sheets and now Oscar Gonzalez being called up, Yuli Gurriel, right? Like, all these guys are having to play, and they were able to contribute, right? Iglesias had a couple of RBIs on Sunday, and Brandon Lockridge is out there playing center field. Like, this is a very lopsided team, but when your pitching is this good, you're going to be in decent shape. And Tatis just continues. I mean, he's right now in that making me regret not picking him for NL MVP, which I almost did. And then I leaned all the way in on the Phillies and Bryce Harper. That's not working out so great so far. But Tatis looks awesome. And Padres are having a damn good time.
The Rockies today, Monday, head to L.A.
Oh, hey, this is big.
They're playing the Dodgers. We'll talk about it in a second. But I'm just imagining the hitter meeting today for the Rockies. You know, these teams, every team basically does a hitter's meeting every day to talk about the pitcher they're facing. It'll be Dustin May today for the Dodgers. But I'm just envisioning the Rockies like sitting around with the hitting coach, and they're like, all right, boys, today, let's touch home plate. Let's score a run.
Woo!
Going, now, dude, not scoring for an entire series is so brutal.
That said, like, this is the first time this has happened to the Rockies ever, which on one hand is like, well, duh, they play half their games at Coors Field. But on the other hand, they also play half their games away from Coors Field when their offense, which is usually actually bad, is trying to adjust playing away from Coors Field. And so in some ways, like, this would be the kind of situation you would expect a team to get shut out for three games, which is the Rockies on the road against a good pitching staff. That said, as I said before, this is quite a rare situation, and I think speaks to both of these teams in a lot of ways.
I'm curious, if you do multiple seasons since the Rockies began existing, like, what's the WRC plus at? Last. The Rockies, since they were birthed, since the Dinger the Dinosaur emerged from an egg beneath Coors Field, the Rockies have an 88 WRC plus. That is the worst mark in all of baseball.
Yeah. Tough.
Hell yeah, dude. Tough. Hell freaking yeah. Last point before we stop talking about the series. The Padres being undefeated at home rules.
Yes.
Someone who doesn't follow baseball wants to ask me, like, who I root for, right? And I think the answer is the home team. Mm. The world in which
root for the home team. Is that what you're telling
me? Root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. And that's because if every home team won every game, baseball would be in a really good place, sort of. Because by the middle of the year, everyone would be like, dang, if I buy tickets to watch my team play, like, they're going to win. And so the Padres, to me, are the best encapsulation of this. Because when they win at home, it's the best. It rules. I don't care if the Padres go out and are, like, mid on the road. If they keep kicking people's butts at home, in the San Diego, I believe, what is it, the Post Tribune, the Times Tribune, the local paper, they should just post the standings of home records. Don't even acknowledge anything that happens outside of San Diego. If it doesn't happen there, it doesn't matter.
And hey, think about how close the standings would be if everybody always won at home. I mean, the playoff races would be unbelievable.
A lot of tiebreakers.
We'd end up in some pretty unfortunate tiebreaker situations. Last thing I'll say on this, as you mentioned, the Rockies heading to Los Angeles. This is important. The first of 13 games against the Dodgers this year. Will they go 0-13 as Jake boldly predicted? I believe when we talked about it on the Bold Prediction Show, we incorrectly said that it was 14. It's only 13 games. Only 13 division games. So can they go 0-13? That starts Monday. And then the other thing that starts this week, as the Padres look to remain undefeated, is the Cubs head to San Diego after being in Los Angeles. We'll talk about the Cubs and Dodgers a little bit later. But if the Padres want to maintain their undefeated streak, they will have to beat a far better team than the Rockies of Colorado. Let us stay on the West Coast and let's head from San Diego to Seattle. We did that once. You remember?
By car. This will be a little bit quicker of a transition than the 3 weeks it took us to drive there.
That we took, I don't know if that one was a full 3 weeks. Anyway, 2015, good times. 10 years ago, my God. The Seattle Mariners take all three games from the Rangers of Texas. Jacob DeGrom, talk about bad award picks. Jacob DeGrom, who has admitted he will not be throwing as hard as he used to on purpose. That strategy has thus far not been working super well. He hasn't been awful, but he allowed multiple home runs in now two of his first three starts, each of his last two. I tweeted out it's the first time since 2019, April of 2019, that has happened for DeGrom. Everyone's like, oh, who cares? He's only made like five starts since 2019. Folks, 2019 is when he won the Cy Young, and he pitched actually all of 2020 in that shortened season and 15 starts in 2021. And like, this is a long time for him to eat. The dude doesn't allow home runs. That's the point. And Jacob DeGrom is looking human. He allows homers to Polanco and to Rowdy Tellez. That is not a great start to the series for them.
This is Pandora's DeGrom.
Hmm.
We opened healthy DeGrom, and in a way, I wish we never had. That we could have just been like, man, Jacob DeGrom could ever get healthy. He's the best. And now I just have to watch.
You have to watch him just be kind of decent. Like, no, we wanted a binary. We want him either to be the best pitcher on earth, or we want him to be sitting and watching.
Because what would you rather have if you're the Rangers? Would you rather have superhero Jacob DeGrom for 10 starts and then he gets hurt? Where you're like, you probably go 9-1?
Well, that that won them the World Series in some respects in 2023, right? They got six awesome starts, and that's apparently all they needed to get into the postseason and then win the World Series. Anyway, Jacob DeGrom, not awesome on Friday. Mariners win a reasonably close one. Saturday, same kind of thing. It's not like the Mariners. Actually, the Mariners, this was like a legit, like, kind of an old-fashioned butt-whooping, which they don't do a lot of. They scored 9 runs at home, which is amazing, and then they win a close one on Sunday. Brian Wu, who was shaky in the first inning on Saturday, was amazing the rest of the way. Logan Gilbert, same thing, basically made one bad pitch, was otherwise excellent. The Mariners' bullpen was tremendous. Cal Raleigh homers in all three games. He passes Mike Zunino on the all-time Mariners catcher home run list, which is very cool. Cal Raleigh is swinging a torpedo bat, and that is working quite well for him. The Mariners just kind of won this series and looked pretty good doing it.
How about that? I love that Rowdy Tellez was the guy who hit the second homer off of Jacob DeGrom to nail that fun fact for you. It was his first of the year. He has looked horrendous to start.
Yeah.
Trivia question.
Yeah. Answer. Mariners depth with Polanco basically can't swing right-handed and can't play defense, but he's raking left-handed and has essentially become their DH. Ryan Bliss, who was kind of their second baseman that made the team out of camp as a second baseman, he's out for a while. He tore bicep or something, so he's out for a few months. They called up Ben Williamson, which all you need to know about Ben Williamson is that he's a great defender. He's slugging like 380 in the minors, and he was drafted 2 years ago. He is, I think, the only non-Christian Campbell non-first rounder to make the big leagues this fast. And he's not like one of the top prospects in baseball like Christian Campbell. So that kind of speaks to how much they've rushed him. We'll see how much he actually plays. Randy continues to be a delight to watch. And the pitching has generally been pretty good. So it was a classic kind of Mariner recipe for success. They are now going on a 9-game road trip. They go to Cincinnati. They go to Boston. They go to Toronto. We'll see how they do away from home. But they get back to .500, which is big for them this weekend.
Mariners fans, cover your ears. Prediction, bold prediction. Adam Frazier ends up on the Mariners again after a midseason trade. And that is a perfect transition our last sweep of the weekend with the Cincinnati Reds taking all three games from the poo-poo Pirates in Cincinnati. We're going to set this up right now. From here on out, the Pittsburgh Pirates are banned from our podcast unless it is related to Paul Skeens or if they win 4 in a row, I'll take them out of jail. This is so bad. And it is bad in the exact way everyone thought it would be bad. I don't blame Derek Shelton, the manager. People want him to get fired. I don't like it when people lose their jobs. This is year six for the Shelton, Ben Cherington, who's the Pobo or the GM. I forget. This is year six for them, and they still stink. They have not gotten any better. The offense is an embarrassment. And, like, yeah, the Reds are...
It's an interesting contrast, honestly. Because these are two of the worst offenses in baseball so far this year. Besides Ellie, this Reds offense has been horrible.
And this was a stoppable force.
Yes.
Meeting a movable object. And it just turns out that one of the two was significantly stronger than the other.
And however, what is important is that what was the only way the Pirates were going to have any chance of being competent, which is to have an elite pitching staff. We knew that was already made more difficult when Jared Jones got hurt before the season.
Yep.
We knew Paul Skenes has been good, but not the best pitcher in the league so far. And so that alone, they are starting pitching ERA with Heaney and Falter. Ugh, not great. Meanwhile, in Cincinnati, as we are now done talking about the Pirates, the Reds have been pitching it. Hunter Green was awesome again. Nick Lodolo. That's an underrated guy who I'm so glad is finally actually healthy, because he has essentially always been good when he has pitched. Yeah. And he has been awesome in his three starts. Not striking out a lot of guys, but has been very effective. Brady Singer, I really like that move. Honestly, he has been very good for them so far. Nick Martinez, who they shockingly retained on the qualifying offer, he has not been awesome. But some of those other bullpen guys have stepped up. Pagan has been solid. Tony Santian is very good. Graham Ashcraft has transitioned well to the bullpen, which he should have been in 2 years ago. The Reds are really pitching. And again, they face a horrible offense, but that is maybe surprisingly going to be their recipe to success this year.
A way to consume baseball is through starting pitchers. Is building your week or thinking about your evening of ball watching around certain starters that are particularly entertaining. That is kind of how I think about it often, because for us, like, we're sifting through so much all the time. And looking at it through that lens kind of helps you pare it down. Hunter Green is a tier one, watch this guy start a ball game right now.
Yeah.
Paul Skenes is still 1-1 for me. Hunter Green right now is 96% of Paul Skenes. And the reason, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons he's not like on that level of fame is because it's been such a slow burn for him. He didn't just show up in the big leagues and dominate. Yes, he showed up in the big leagues and was throwing 1,000 miles an hour right away, but he didn't really know what to do with it. Go back and watch the highlights from his start this weekend. He wasn't as sharp as he'd been in the other starts this year. Mm-hmm. He still struck out 8 guys and kicked the Pirates, because the Pirates stink. But Hunter Green right now is humming. He is humming. This is what it was supposed to look like when he was drafted 2nd overall. This is I think when The Athletic does their ace rankings next year, he will be one of the aces. I said this on our last episode. I'm all in on Hunter Green. And my plea, my recommendation to those of you listening, many of you, most of you are not Reds fans, I imagine, because math. Make some time in your week for Hunter Green. Carve out a little moment for him. He's worth the time.
I agree. And just big picture for the Reds. You know, they need Matt McClain back. They need anybody else. I mean, this offense has also been putrid. Like, they are, I believe, 29th in OPS plus ahead of only the Pirates and, yes, behind the White Sox. I know Steer had some injuries throughout the year, but Fraley, awful. Friedel, Lux has not added anything. CES Candelario continues to be bad. Like, this is why I am not all right, great. You know, this pitching staff can carry them to a wild card berth. They're going to need so many more hitters to step up. That said, the pitching has been a really pleasant surprise. So credit to him.
You know, who used to be able to swing it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Hunter Green.
That's true. Maybe we could get him in the lineup. Mariners versus Reds this week in Cincinnati.
Fun.
Not normally I'm not sure what the... I actually want to look quickly at what the pitching matchups are for that one, because obviously it will not include Hunter Green, I believe. But still, I imagine we should get... Yeah, so we get Luis Castillo against Lodolo. That's fun on Tuesday. Nick Martinez, Bryce Miller on Wednesday, and Brian Wu and Brady Singer on Thursday. So still pretty solid. I would not expect a ton of runs in those games, even in Cincinnati. All right, those are our sweeps. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to go around the league, talk about some of the other series that caught our attention from the weekend. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. There were 12 CRI this weekend that we have yet to talk about. What we're going to do is Jordan and I are each going to pick two. We're going to chew on them. We're going to dig into them. We're going to sink our teeth through them. And then the rest we're going to chuck into turbo mode in the third segment of this podcast. Jordan, because you are older than me, wiser than me, kinder than me, and have worse eyesight than me, I will let you go first and pick a series.
I am going to go with the bold selection of the Cubs and the Dodgers. Whoa. As the Dodgers don't look very
loose.
Good. Oops. Dodgers have lost six of their last nine.
Three CRI in a row.
They lose the series at home against the Chicago Cubs. On Friday, it was like, oh, there are the Dodgers. Yamamoto continues his push for, you know, NL Cy Young conversations. Tommy Edman homers again. He's up to six home runs. Oh my God. How many Edmonds would you want? By the way, quick aside, amazing email that we got from David.
Great email. Read
this. Although it's kind of big hater energy because he outs himself as a Padres fan. David says, hi, Jake and Jordan. Last week, you guys were questioning how many Tommy Edmonds would the Dodgers take? I would like to propose an alternative. How many Kyle Farmers do the Rockies take? My guess is seven. Let McMahon and Tovar play, then fill the rest with Kyle Farmers. This is inspired by Farmer having all three of the Rockies hits on Friday and then eight of their 12 total bases for the series. Yikes. All right. Anyway, moving on. Cubs, Dodgers. So the Dodgers win. Close one. Nice Friday night victory. And then a historic ass-whooping on Saturday night. We actually
I believe it was the largest home shutout loss in Dodger history. This franchise, by the way, been around for a while.
They played a lot of ball, and most of that ball has been good ball.
Mostly.
But this was not good ball. Now is the final score skewed a little bit by Miguel Rojas throwing Ephesus for the last two innings? Yes.
Doesn't matter. I don't care. Look. So I missed this, obviously, in the moment because I was being Jewish on Saturday night during the Seder, and I knew Roki was starting, so I saw the box score. I was like, 16-0. This must be a horrible Roki Sasaki start.
Roki must have walked 10 again.
And no, this was Roki's best start.
He was good. And somehow this ended up being his first loss of the season because he did, you know, command kind of wavered late, but he was fine. He kind of did his job, and then poor Ben Kasparius, who had been nearly untouchable up until then, just got obliterated. Luis Garcia, same thing. And then Miguel Rojas imitating his friends, which was great.
Let's talk about that.
But the Cubs just whooped him. I think it was like 21 hits or something.
So Miguel Rojas is you know, infielder doing position player pitching jamboree. And he's mimicking various pitchers in the Dodgers. Are you pro or anti? Because, you know, for me, if the Dodgers really cared about winning,
it's true.
Winning, not just having a good time, they wouldn't be, you know, engaging in such revelry in times of defeat. That's not what winners do.
Yeah, I think I love that take from a take standpoint. I don't like it from the standpoint of, listen, I think when position players pitching happens, we know we've been mostly disenchanted with this. However, this is an opportunity to entertain.
Yeah.
And he succeeded in that sense. So
big winner from this, Landon Knack, because Miguel Rojas imitates, I believe, four of his teammates.
I saw
Yamamoto,
yeah,
Sasaki, Kershaw, and Landon Knack. So Landon Knack sneaking his way in.
What?
Mimicked Landon Knack, which is incredible. Kershaw, Sasaki, Yamamoto, Landon Knack.
Wait, but did that make this clip that MLB posted?
There's a chance MLB nixed Landon Knack from the clip they posted.
They definitely did. That's so disappointing. So then I feel like that's an L for Landon Knack because they didn't even bother including him in that.
No, anyway. Getting included by Rojas is a huge win.
By Rojas. No. That's I totally agree with that. Big losers. Great. I missed that. That's awesome.
Glasnow, apparently not distinctive enough. Blake Snell throws with his left hand, so that's
he
a harder one.
He just met him. He hasn't seen
him. Yeah, he doesn't know him.
He hasn't really been the same thing. That is very funny. Anyway,
Sunday.
So Cubs kicked their ass on Saturday. And then on Sunday, also not watching live because Seder number two, we get Colin Ray. It's a little disingenuous to say out-dueling because he only pitched like three or four innings, but he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And Tyler Glasnow was fine. It was not a terrible Tyler Glasnow outing. But Colin Ray plus six relievers plus PCA, you just mentioned the largest on Saturday, the largest home defeat in Dodgers history. PCA becomes the first, I believe, if I stat-headed this correctly, I did not see this elsewhere, first visiting player in Dodgers Stadium history to hit two homers and a triple in the same game. So that's
wow.
Pretty cool.
Pretty good.
Pete had not homered yet this season. He was at the top of the Why Haven't You Homered Yet leaderboard by plate appearances, and he gets two and a triple. Michael Busch hits another home run. He looked great this weekend. A little revenge series for him. And in one game, PCA gets his batting kind of batting line back up to league average, which combined with defense and base running, which has once again been elite. There you go. One big game,
great
and
player.
Now it's looking like a very, very good player. There was an interesting report from Mark Feinsand over the weekend that the Cubs approached PCA about an extension. The initial report said that extension was worth $75 million. He followed up to clarify that it would have maxed out at $75 million with a bunch of escalators. That is an important clarification there, I would
correct.
Imagine, in terms of how seriously PCA took these extension talks. Whether that goes anywhere, who knows? It's a little strange to kind of get that nugget of a report at any point here, but I guess something to monitor. And a pretty huge series win for the Cubs, which we are now going to douse with some cold water involving one of their best pitchers.
Justin Steele needing elbow surgery. He will be out for the remainder of the year. Steele, you may remember him from when he was horrible in Tokyo, but he has been one of the better pitchers in baseball each of the last two seasons, and the Cubs not having him is a huge blow. There's a reason he was starting one of the first two games of the year. He was one of their better pitchers. Now they'll have to lean on Imanaga, Boyd, Tyon, Ben Brown, who was awesome.
Yeah.
On Sunday, Colin Ray, Jordan Wicks, the Cubs might end up needing to add a pitcher at the deadline. Something to keep an eye on. Interesting landing spot for Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins.
Oh, yeah.
If the Cubs are getting desperate, I will say, all things considered, Cubs look pretty good. That division is they look right now like the best team in that division to me. My grandfather-in-law is a big Cubs fan at the Seder. He had many questions about the Cubs, and that tells you that some of the feeling, at least for now, has returned to the North side.
They've been one of the best offenses in baseball for sure. Nice to see them kind of do that against a better team than doing it against the YOLO A's in Sacramento. But we will see what this Cubs rotation continues to look like. Yes, Ben Brown, good Saturday. That's my fault. I had that wrong in the document. Colin Ray will also be pitching. This is also why you get Colin Ray, pretty much, this exact situation. So I'm sure Craig Counsell appreciates having him around. As for the Dodgers, because of that disaster on Saturday, run differential is now at zero.
Wow. It's like they didn't exist.
Yeah, which is not anywhere close to what you would expect them to be at. They are in third place, the third place Los Angeles Dodgers. And why is that? Let's go to our next series, Jake.
Yeah. The San Francisco Giants return home to Uptown New York. Steps away from the Polo Grounds. Emotional moment, I'm sure, for all these Dodgers.
Yeah,
who played the Polo Grounds.
You could tell he was really feeling it.
Look at what it means to Giants taking 2 out of 3 over the Yankees. It has been abysmal weather-wise in New York so far this year, which I'm just gonna like jazz, and this is understandable. I just want to zoom in on this very quickly. Jazz has been terrible recently. I know he homered on Sunday. This is a dude from the Bahamas who then played for the Marlins. Like, I understand that playing in cold weather is a part of the job. And yes, he was in the World Series last year when it was cold. It has just been like a whole different bag of worms in New York. And so I'm not like shocked that he has been struggling in the frigid temperatures. And remember, the Yankees road trip that they were on was Pittsburgh and Detroit. So it's
true.
Like they have not
true.
Yet.
Tough start. tough start. Did not get the West Coast swing in April, which I'm sure he would have preferred.
But the main takeaways here, Giants kick Stroman's butt on Friday. Yankees come back and win the Saturday game. And the Sunday game is very close. Carlos Rodon looks great through five innings, allows a three-run tater to Jung Hu MFN Lee. The Who League Gans rise up.
We might be having a special guest here soon, folks. We've already, our call to action was already decently successful. I know this was a road game. I don't know if at some point the hooligans might have to start traveling like groupies as they he's earned it. He's deserved it, right? He's got a couple homers, or I guess three homers over the weekend.
Three.
And man, oh man, he looks damn good. Awesome, I believe he's top five in baseball in OPS. He's batting third now. And it's just like totally changes the complexion of just like what we think about this Giants lineup, because
yeah.
We, our optimistic version of Jung Hu Lee was like, good leadoff guy. Get on base, won't strike out, steal some bags, play some good defense. Yeah. Now it's like, oh boy, is this like an impact bat? We'll see. We'll see. It's a big beacon in the Bronx. We'll boost those numbers. Meanwhile, the Yankees rotation. Oof.
Worst. The worst. It is the worst rotation. The worst. They have the worst ERA of any rotation in baseball. They only have one quality start all year with Stroman hitting the IL. So just quickly on Stroman, the stuff is down. And the stuff was never up to begin with. He's throwing 89. That's how you end
up with an 11 ERA or whatever. Yeah.
And I know he thinks he's a starter. There is a chance he is not a starter anymore in terms of stuff. We'll see what he looks like when he gets off the IL. The Yankees rotation, which looks like a strength, I still believe in this organization to get outs, but they have the worst ERA in baseball. Currently on the IL, Gerrit Cole, Clark Schmidt, who's back this week, Stroman, Luis Gil, who won the Rookie of the Year, JT Brubaker, who they were counting on for depth, which leaves them with Fried, Rodon, Warren, and Carlos Carrasco. Like, that's just...
And that's four stars. We need five.
You need five.
If not more
five.
Than that. So I don't know where they go from here. I don't really know who the next guy up would be that would realistically make a start. I truly have no clue. Like, I guess they got Jake Woodford at the end of spring training. Like, I don't know, man. Are we stretching Yoenis out? Are we Allen Winans they just claimed on waivers?
Allen Winans was with them in camp. Allen Winans is my might get a spot start pick.
Okay. Well, at this point, nothing's going to surprise me because, as we said, they have been decimated. But Clark Schmidt coming back should certainly help. Otherwise, Giants, just great. Series win. I know Friday was messy. I know there's a lot of weather discourse because the game is shortened. Should they have not played? We're not going to talk about that. Giants now, further opportunity to prove themselves. Four-game series in Philadelphia starting on Monday. So that is a nice little kind of National League measuring stick there, which should be nice. A massive opportunity if one of the teams can really take advantage. But anyway, Yankees are, where are they this week? Oh, they have the Royals coming to town.
They're at home.
So I don't know if you'll be there for any of those, but that is Royals. We'll get to them later. Anyway, Giants looking very good. They are in second place ahead of the Dodgers. Very cool.
White Sox and the Red Sox played in a battle of footwear. And the White Sox won. The White Sox won a series.
They got dangerously close to sweeping this one as they explode for 11 runs on Friday. I know the Red Sox booth, I don't know if you saw this, at the end of last week, they were talking after a tough series against the Blue Jays. They were like, oh, well, thank goodness we're going to the White Sox because that team just... As you should. You would say that. I was saying that on the pod on Friday after I watched them get swept in Cleveland. I was like, this is just an abomination. But baseball is baseball, so the White Sox score 11 runs on Friday. They walk it off on Saturday. And on Sunday, Garrett Crochet, their old friend, is no-hitting them. I believe perfect game through five. No-hitting them through seven. And my man, Chase Mydroth, where was he in Cleveland? Would have loved to have him up for that series. What a fun player. He breaks up the no-hitter. He gets on base a bunch in his first weekend in the big leagues. Trevor Story, the hero for Boston on Sunday, he basically supplies all the offense as the Red Sox still barely hung on Sunday to salvage not getting swept by what is likely the least talented team in the sport. And Red Sox, I don't know, guys. What are we doing? This is part of our larger AL East conversation as we lump in Blue Jays Orioles here in a second. This was our pick, and I don't know. Are we feeling that much worse? Do we think that because the rest of the division hasn't necessarily pulled ahead, we can still feel some amount of, because we know Roman Anthony's probably going to come soon? Like, what do we think?
I'm perplexed by the Red Sox, man. I really am. Because Red Sox fans want right now to be irrationally positive, and they have so many reasons to just jump all in. The only reason is the record. Like, that is the only thing holding them back, is that they just have more losses than wins right now. But when you watch you watch Garrett Crochet, and you're like, I'm going to get the Boston B tattooed on my forehead. Like, like play Tessie, let's do this forever.
This guy's, he's, and even, again, like, not all of their guys are hitting, right? Duran has really struggled so far. We're still waiting on the best version of some of these other guys. And the pitching, because of some of the injuries, has maybe not been as awesome as we had hoped, besides Crochet. But I don't know. They're still right in it. I still feel fine about picking them to win the division. That's because none of these other teams are making us feel that good either.
And let's transition to Blue Jays Orioles, our last series from this weekend. We're going to dive into a little bit more focus. Rained out on Friday. The Jays and O's split the Saturday and Sunday game. The Birds looking good. Up 6-3 late against the Jays on Sunday. It's on the TV pre-Seder. Got my Baltimore family here. We're feeling good. And then, bing, bang, alakazam, the O's blow a lead. Yeah. Jays come storming back. Jeff Hoffman with a 6-out save, throwing scoreless innings in the 9th and the 10th. It was one of those outings from reliever where at no point are you like, this team will get a hit off this guy. I'm going to say something right now. I'm not sure if I believe it, but I want to say it. I think Jeff Hoffman is the best reliever in the world right now. Suarez argument.
Sure.
But this is a good because this is an
answer that basically changes by the month. And what he has done so far, right, I guess it wasn't a save, it was a win. Second consecutive outing, which was 6 outs and a win. He did it in Boston in extra innings.
Yeah.
And then 4 days later, he does it in Baltimore, blows the kiss after the end of the game. Perhaps a reference to, oh, you were going to sign me and then you failed my physical. There's a good quotes from, or like the Orioles were basically like, well, I had nothing to do with this. Like the players
were like, we'd love to have Jeff Hoffman, please.
Right. They're like, yeah, we could have used Jeff Hoffman in the 7th, but I didn't. Adley Rutsch was like, I didn't do his physical. Like, what, is not my fault? So anyway, but this is good spice. You can understand it. And Jeff Hoffman, as you mentioned, like, he's pitching like he's the guy. He's the man. He's been great.
And especially in a year when a lot of good closers have started rocky.
Yeah.
Eddie D's been bad with the Mets. Class A's been bad in Cleveland. Yep. Josh Hader has had some ugh moments.
Devin Williams.
Devin Williams. Like, there have been, we've seen some of the dudes at the top look bad. Hoffman, opposite. Hoffman looks amazing. And there was some chatter over the winter about whether Jeff Hoffman might want to be a starter. I think if the Jays are like, what if we just stretch him out a little bit and we can just deploy him in these like 2-inning spurts, let him get 5 outs all the time. Like, that is such a valuable pitcher to have. Watching the Jays come back against the O's had me thinking irrationally about Toronto. Like, the
first place,
when that bottom of the order just makes contact and Ernie Clement and Lukes and Roden and Miles Straw are just getting on base and being pests. Like, it's an interesting club. Still, I have absolutely no idea what to think about the AL East. Before the year, I had it Red Sox, Yankees, Orioles, Rays, Jays. Mm-hmm. No. Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, Orioles, Jays was my order.
Yeah. And I had Rays second.
You had Rays second. Would you change that right now? Like, how has the early season impacted what you think about this division?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tampa's a tough one so far. I could see a situation where, I don't know. They've all given me reasons to panic and reasons to feel good. So I'm going to stay with what I did. It's a few weeks. But I agree. Yeah.
The thing for me that's super weird about the Yankees, they've been hitting, I think, more than anyone could have expected or hoped to this point in the season. They have a 140 team WRC plus.
Yeah, like, and now we're moving far enough away from, you know, the bludgeoning of the Brewers that it is not just one game that is propping up all their numbers, although that still helps.
It helps.
Because it was a record-setting offensive day. But yeah, no, they have. It's been a fairly balanced offensive attack. I mean, Ben Rice, you know, continues to do Ben Rice things.
Every team, you look at them, you watch them for three innings, and you're like, they are going to win the division. And then you watch them play another three innings, and you're like, they are going to get relegated, and you just don't know where to end up.
Last thing I'll say on Hoffman before we take a break is, I think, it is interesting to think about, let's say, oh, maybe we should start him. The point that I was making is, look, Jeff Hoffman's awesome. My two concerns are, can he possibly be as good as he's been the last 2 years when he was, even if he wasn't the closer, one of the best relievers in baseball? And two, can he fix this atrocious bullpen by himself? Because they brought back Jimmy Garcia, but other than that, I was like, why is this awful unit going to be that much better with one guy? Well, so far, Jeff Hoffman is basically doing it by himself, and it's been pretty cool. I don't know if he's going to throw two innings every time. I assume they'd want him more than twice a week, so we'll see how that kind of evolves, but he's been awesome. Last thing to say about the series is that because of the rainout, they will now play a four-game series at the end of July. So that is a new opportunity on the schedule for both of these teams. And for now, it means that the Orioles are still without a series win this year. Them and the Rockies are the last two teams in baseball that can say that. And yet the Orioles are still, they're in last place, but they're 2.5 games back of first. So they are just fine.
Jeff Hoffman will receive a Cy Young vote this year. New bold prediction. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we will fly through the rest of the series and talk for way too long about statues. And welcome back. Baseball Barbecast. Tigers took 2 out of 3 over the Twins. I had someone in baseball say to me, the Tigers are the best team in the American League. I don't think we know that yet. I don't think we know anything about the American League.
I think I know this. I think I know the Twins are not the best team in the American
League. The Twins. Feel what pretty good about embarrassment. What an embarrassment. Yeah. They win the Sunday game, but it is just not looking good in Minnesota right now. Maybe we'll talk more about the Tigers later in the week, but I want to focus in on a Twins thing. So Joe Mauer got a statue, and it's a good statue. There's been a lot of statue discourse recently because there have been, unfortunately, a lot of bad statues. notably, you know, Dwayne Wade or Cristiano Ronaldo. There have been some bad statues. Good statue. I think baseball does statues the best. I think we have good, I think we do statues
this
well.
This is a great statue. I'm looking at it now. This is...
Being this immortalized one as a statue while still alive really is just a hilarious thing to me. And it led me down a statue rabbit hole, a statue hole, you may say. And I found a Reddit post from a user, the album is just drums. I love Reddit, dude. It's hilarious. And it is a list of every statue at a Major League Baseball stadium. There are 129 players, give or take. It's like a little fuzzy, with statues or players featured in statues. Some teams have no statues. Some teams have a ton of statues. The A's don't have statues because they just, you know, got to Sacramento, and the Marlins don't have a statue of a player because they have the home run sculpture instead. Some teams have, like the Blue Jays, just the statue of an owner. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Angels, nothing else. Statue chat fires me up. From all of this data, Jordan, what stands out to you about the state of statues in ball?
Yeah, so I think what I'm seeing here is there's kind of two main categories, right?
It's greatest player. I would say three main categories. Yeah. Okay. Great players.
Great awesome players player. like franchise icons, right? Joe Mauer is squarely in that category, right? He is one of the greatest players in our franchise history, and he should, anytime anybody comes to a game involving our team, they should understand that this is a person that is important to our franchise.
Right.
Then there are individual moments.
Correct.
You know, you look at this list and you say, what? Akinori Iwamura has a statue? And you're like, how's that possible? Well, that's because, what is the exact, I'm trying to get the exact situation. I believe
It was the last out of the 2008 ALCS.
ALCS for the race to go to the World Series is him stepping on the base,
second base.
On second base and putting his arms up like choice. The Rays are going to the World Series.
Correct.
With respect to Akinori Iwamura, obviously not one of the greatest players in franchise history, but happened by chance to be in that moment and have that moment. And I guess there are a couple other examples on here. Well, the third one, I guess, would just be like larger than like just like famous baseball people, like beyond.
The third one? No, the third one to me is you're rich. Like okay. This is like owners and like other people who had enough of an impact that they kind of like get a statue. Yeah. I think the most interesting thing is that the Dodgers only have two. It's just Koufax and Jackie. I wonder if they'll start putting more statues out around the stadium. I also think that the number of statues you have might have something to do with where your stadium is located. Like if you're in the middle of nowhere, do you need a statue? If you're in a city, it's probably better to have a statue. People will walk by, they'll see your statue, they'll check it out. I love that Frank Robinson has three statues. He has one in three different places.
That's badass.
Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, where he became the first black manager in baseball history. Mm-hmm. He's depicted as a manager in that statue, which I think is like the statue of a manager managing is great.
Well, that's the other thing. And that was the other thing I was going to say about the Mauer one, right? I am curious, especially in this case when Joe Mauer is, you know, alive and well, did he have a say? What did he want to be portrayed as, right? Joe Mauer, one of the greatest hitting catchers of all time, but catcher is how he identifies. And this statue is him getting ready to throw a runner out, which is great. I also love here that we have his mask on the ground, kind of like separate, but like as part of the statue as well. But that would be my question is how many people get to decide what they want to be portrayed as?
It should have been Joe Mauer in catcher's gear hitting.
Right, that would really get the point across a little bit more. But I do wonder that because I think that is also something as you project forward. I think that's kind of the last part of this conversation is who is, you mentioned the Dodgers. I mean, presumably Kershaw is going to be in pretty good position to get a statue if he wants. Now, what do you want him with the high leg kick, with the, like, do you want him just like a moment of him celebrating winning the World Series? Like, I don't know, you know, there could have been versions of that, but
it'll be with him. It'll be him with his hands over his head coming set is my take.
Yeah, I think so too, but he's an obvious one. But again, the Dodgers have had plenty of others. So who else, what are some other big takeaways since you dug into this more?
So the highest career WAR ever without a statue is either players who played a long time ago for multiple teams or it's dudes who did steroids. So like, Bonds, Clemens don't have statues. Cy Young doesn't have a statue. Cy Young, I guess, does have a ton of statues, and it's just Cy Young awards. and like
Bonds,
big
racist,
Tris Speaker. Then there was a situation where the Twins had a Clark Griffith statue that they took down because he said a bunch of racist stuff, and that's a big win that statue came down. The ones who need a statue, Ricky Henderson never got a statue in Oakland. I think erecting some sort of statue of him in Oakland separate from the A's would be a cool way to immortalize him. Because of what he meant to the city and separate city from ball club in that interesting way. Pujols in St. Louis feels like a no-brainer.
Yes.
Chipper in Atlanta feels like a no-brainer. Big Poppy in Boston feels like one that should happen. And then Randy Johnson in Arizona, the D-backs don't have a statue of a player, and if not Randy, then who?
So the Chipper one is interesting just because if I'm reading your chart correctly, the Braves don't have any of the other 90s Braves. We don't have any of the pitchers.
Yeah.
So to pick Chipper would make plenty of sense because he was a one-team guy.
Jordan, if I told you that I would build a statue, like, do you want a statue of you? I think a statue of me while living is...
No, that's the other thing. I also almost wonder if there are some guys that are like, no,
statue till I die.
Yeah, then do whatever you want. But I don't know. It's a good question. But let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. What other statues should we have? Are we missing? That we'll see.
You know what's a funny idea?
Nats fan, Nats fan producer Colin Brennan in the chat saying Howie Kendrick deserves a statue for the Nationals.
No.
Probably not.
Zimmerman, though.
Way stronger candidate.
Like, the difference between statue, number retirement, Hall of Famer is always interesting to me. What do people mean to places?
Colin's arguing that, right, for a single moment. To me, the single moment would be Zach Greinke getting pulled.
That's awesome. The Dodgers should have a statue at Dodger Stadium of Blake Snell getting...
Oh, Blake Snell getting pulled? Yeah. Man. Anyway, all right. It is time to go through the rest of these series. We're going to do this super quickly. It's time to throw into turbo mode, talk about the rest of the baseball from the weekend. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more series. Jake Mintz, let's go quick. We begin at the Stein, where the Tampa Bay Rays took 2 of 3 over the Atlanta Braves, who are now 4-11. That is a very bad record. Junior Caminero hit home runs on Saturday and Sunday. Would love to see him get going. Jonathan Aranda has basically been Willier Abreu, destroying right-handers, barely facing left-handers, but you should respect him. One thing you know about the Braves, Spencer Strider is, in all likelihood, coming back this week. That is very exciting. Almost exactly a year after he had surgery, he looked amazing in his rehab outing. Can't wait to have Spencer Strider back in the Braves.
And that's really important because Chris Sale stinks right now. Chris Sale does not look, maybe it doesn't stink, but he's not the guy who won the Cy Young.
He ain't on track to win the Cy Young, that's for sure.
If you go look at his vertical release point over time, it is dropping in a concerning rate. So I am worried about Chris Sale. The Mets take 2 out of 3 over the A's. Barely hang on Friday, lose Saturday, come back and win on Sunday. The Mets are 10-5, even though the offense has been pretty underwhelming because the pitching staff is kicking butt. We had a hilarious moment. I think it was in the Saturday game where the A's cart broke down on the field and had to be pushed by the grounds crew. Just one of those little moments serves as a reminder that they are not playing in a major league state.
No, they are not. Mets have won 8 of 10. That's the best of baseball. They're in first place in the National League East. Kodai Senga looked fantastic, outdueling Luis Severino on Sunday. Probably a tough bounce for Luis Severino. I'm sure he wanted to beat his old team, but alas. We stay in the A's are not very good. We stay in the American League West, where the Angels lose their first series of the year in Houston. The Angels keep hitting home runs. They have the most home runs in baseball. They've got 30 homers in 15 games, but they do not win this series in Houston. We had a very strange situation over the weekend with a Mike Trout going for a ball down the line. It was very similar to the Mookie Betts situation where the fan, for some reason, tried to pull the ball out of Mike Trout's glove after Trout seemingly caught it. It was not as egregious as the Mookie situation. It didn't last as long, and the fan immediately exhibited a level of regret, which was different, and I think that contributed to what happened after the game as well.
Huge life lesson here, people. Huge life lesson. Mistakes happen. You can err in this world. Accept fault, show contrition, and apologize. That is the number one difference here. The fan who reached into Trout's glove and yanked the ball out, I don't think realized that it was like Trout's glove while he was doing this. Yeah. And which, I mean, you should. You're in the front row. Players jumping into you. It's Mike Trout. Whatever. Immediately apologizes. Tries to, like, give the ball back.
Yeah. It was
instant, hilarious.
Instant just, embarrassment and shame.
Whereas Mike Trout, the guy in the World Series, Austin Capobianco, was like, yeah, go Yanks!
Yeah, exactly. So this was a better way to handle it. And what do you get? You get to meet Mike Trout because Mike Trout's a nice guy.
The way Mike Trout handled this was so funny. He's like, that's a working man spending hard-earned money to bring his kid to a ball game. Mike Trout acting like he's the best player in 1951.
Angels end up winning that one, so Trout was in a better mood. But the Astros win on Sunday. Kyle Hendricks gets hit around 10 strikeouts for Hayden Wesneski. Would not be surprised if he is a very good starter for the Astros this year.
One last thing about this play, the Trout play, is that in the pool report, when the umpire Alan Porter is asked about it and compares it to the Mookie play, he says that he didn't see the Mookie play. Do you see this?
Alan Porter, this fires me up so much. because Alan Porter has been one of the best. He's considered one of the best umps in baseball. And I remember last year when the umpire assignments came out for the World Series, I was like, where's Alan Porter? He's the guy. And it sounds like Alan Porter, who was not assigned to the World Series, was like, awesome. I'm going to Cancun. I'm going to, who knows? I'm logging off. My season's over. Like, it's
I
done.
Don't know him. World
I
Series?
Don't know. I don't
Sorry.
Care. I do not need to call balls and strikes in Dodgers, Yankees. This is not my problem. I'm not even going to watch. I love that. I love that from Alan Porter. That's fantastic. Or
the quote is, I wasn't in the World Series. I don't even remember seeing the play.
Oh, that does fire me up. There is a little bit of concern there because you would imagine that would be a situation that umpires would be made aware of.
Don't care.
The following season.
Don't care.
I love it. Alan Porter, cheers to you. D-backs take 2 of 3 over the Brewers. Jose Quintana was fantastic in his Brewers debut on Friday. And then it was kind of all snakes from there as the bullpen for Milwaukee totally melts down on Saturday. D-backs score 5 in the 9th and walk it off. Gallen doesn't look great early on Sunday, but then he kind of cruises the rest of the way, and the bullpen was fantastic. Corbin Carroll is on one right now. He is in
really
the NL MVP mix for sure. He looks like, you know, whatever fixes he made that made him one of the best players in baseball in the second half last year after his rough start have carried over, if not even more so. He looks tremendous. The D-backs offense continues to roll on. This is a nice series win for Arizona, who at 9-7 is in fourth place. However, they would not be in fourth place in literally any other division, but that is the division they're in.
Great moment from this series was Jose Quintana carving for the Brewers. We did a lot of bits over the winter about how it felt like Jose Quintana had spent 4 years with the Brewers at some point during his career, but that's not true. It just feels like he's a Brewer. Brewers manager Pat Murphy, this is from Bob Nightingale. Brewers manager Pat Murphy on Jose Quintana's 7-inning shutout. Quote, I told him I've seen that performance a bunch, but it's the first time I've been happy about it.
Amen to that. And they did need it because, not great the rest of the weekend. Nice series win for the Snakes. Let's bring it here to Northeast Ohio, where the Cleveland Guardians take 2 of 3 over the Kansas City Royals. Tanner Bibee was better than Chris Bubich on Friday. Chris Bubich, not the best. He was pretty good, but Royals offense is not awesome right now. They have been struggling. They do manage to score against Emmanuel Clase, as many teams have on Saturday. Yeah. However, they could do nothing. Yeah.
If Chris Bubich becomes enough of a thing that he gets his own cheering section, that would be unfortunate because there's really no way to do that appropriately.
Yeah, probably not. I know Rex Hudler referred to him as Boobalicious on TV.
Nope.
That has already happened. He already just went for that 2 starts into the season.
Yeah.
I like, after consulting with Jake Eisenberg, Royals radio broadcast friend of the show, listens to the pod. Hey, Jake. Thanks for lunch, Jake.
Hey.
The Croatian Sensation as a nickname for Mr. Bubich, as he has Croatian lineage and is quite proud
of. Does he identify as a...
He does. I believe he was wearing Croatian flag socks at one point in recent... So that's fun.
A
little bit of a stretch. But hey, it's different. I like it. It's leaning into his heritage there.
Yeah,
anyway, Tanner Bibee was better than him on Friday. So the big story of the weekend for Cleveland... the Royals win on Sunday. Cole Reagans was awesome. Good for them to get a game. Luis Ortiz, who was atrocious in spring training and in his first start of the season, has looked fantastic for Cleveland each of his last 2 starts. He is a huge part of their season after their rotation essentially collapsed around Tanner Bibee last season, where they had to rely on Matthew Boyd coming off surgery and Alex Cobb and stuff. Luis Ortiz looks very, very, very good. That is a big deal for the Gardos.
Bibee versus Booby. That's the joke.
Yeah.
All right, Cardinals taking 2 out of 3 over the Phillies. Hilarious Sunday game, which was Matthew Liberatore outdueling Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler, I think, is the best pitcher in the world. If I needed one game, I still believe that. He could give him up, though. He's squarely on the can give him up list. When he gives him up, he gives him up. And that's what happened on Sunday. The Phillies, bizarre offensive performance for them, going 14 for 94 over the weekend. That's like a 140-ish batting average. If I told you that, you would have been like, they struck out 90 times. They only, quote, struck out 23 times, which is really not...
For them, that's not
a lot.
Not awful.
That's like 8 a game, almost. Like, that's fine.
If
they didn't hit a home run, though.
Yeah. If the strategy was to put the ball in play and not strike out, it did not work as they lose this series to St. Louis. Just not. Yeah. There are some hitters on Philly that are not having a good time. That includes Alec Bohm. That includes Brandon Marsh. And they need to get going here a little bit. And as we mentioned, they got the Giants coming to town here. So they gotta get right here.
Big series. Following Philly's commentary is hilarious on Twitter because it's never going fine.
No.
It's either on fire or it's fire. There's no middle ground. And it's a long season.
The Marlins. Last series to talk about. The
make us proud.
Fish.
Woof.
Folks, the Miami Marlins are above 500.
Wow.
A few weeks into the season. They're 8-7 now after taking the series over the Nationals of Washington. James Wood.
Is their attendance also above 500?
I think it was. I think it's been. I should check what their attendance has been recently relative to recent seasons. Anyway, they are 8-7. Their run differential is still negative, but that is okay. That is what the Fish do. James Wood hit an unbelievable opposite field home run over the weekend that had the Marlins broadcast in absolute shambles. Because of where he kind of hit this baseball. I think it was 110 exit velo. I was doing some StatCast searches on this. Opposite field home runs at Marlins Park, Lone Depot, whatever it's been called over the years. They do happen, but almost always they are way closer to the left field foul pole, right? They're much more kind of directly to left field. To hit an opposite field home run to left center, really, in Miami is very rare.
Yeah,
I think Josh Bell has done it a couple times. I think Bryce Harper has done it a couple times. I think Juan Soto, again, the Nationals have had some decent left-handed power hitters over the years. And this is another one. And James Wood's probably going to be doing this for a while. But the real story for the weekend is Matt Mervis. Oh, my gosh. This guy who was kind of squeezed out of playing time, never really put it together at the major league level with the Cubs, traded to Miami for Vidal Brujan. He's up to 5 home runs. He had a big pinch hit homer over the weekend to dead center. He's got real power. This is a situation where he's obviously going to actually get playing time, which is great. And cool for Matt Mervis. He's a good dude. I'm rooting for that guy. So there you go. That's it. That was all the baseball that happened. I think we are done. I think we did. I think we did a podcast. I think this was a very fun podcast. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Keep those emails coming. We got a bunch more good ones over the weekend. Perhaps we will have a special guest later this week. We will see. But for now, thank you to producer Colin Brennan for making this show possible. Jake Mintz, final words.
We have Jackie Robinson Day on Tuesday before we pod again. And just keep an eye on who talks out of both sides of their mouth.
Yes, just leave it at that. That is a good way to put it. We will certainly be talking about everything from Jackie Robinson Day on Wednesday. But until then, thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you soon.